the COVID-19 pandemic has pushed us into unknown territory. We don't know how long we'll have to stay away from family or friends, or how long kids will be in and out of school, or when this will finally stop being a crisis. Our next guest says she's learned how to deal with not knowing from sled dogs. Blair Braverman and her husband, Quince Mountain, have a sled dog team called Braver Mountain Mushing based in northern Wisconsin. Blair is a dog sledder who ran the Iditarod in Alaska in 2019. She also races closer to home. Blair is an author, and she recently wrote an article in the New York Times. It's called What My Sled Dogs Taught Me About Planning for the Unknown. I spoke with her last month about that piece. Blair, I hadn't thought of this until you opened your piece with it. When you set out with your sled dogs, they don't know how far they have to run. I mean, it seems so obvious now. What does that mean, though, for your dogs?
It's true. I think that's one of those things, like you said, that you wouldn't think about it, until you're really working with these dogs closely. But, you know, sometimes we go out for a 5-mile run. Sometimes we go out for a 500-mile run, and the dogs don't know. I mean, they have context clues, right? Like if there's a lot of people watching, usually we're in a race, and that means that we're going to go for a longer journey than if we just leave out of the yard at home. But they don't really know, and they don't know, you know, even in a race, we could do 10 miles and then rest, or we could do 60 miles and then rest. And that's the hardest thing. I always think, you know, sometimes I think, oh gosh, if they could speak English for 5 minutes, I could explain so much to them and we'd really be on the same page. But of course, that's not the fun of it. The fun of it is figuring out how to communicate, despite having very different ways of seeing the world and interacting with it. And the biggest challenge with the dogs not knowing how far they're going to go is that they love running. They want to run, and therefore they don't pace themselves. They run as if they just get to run as hard as they want, and then they get tired. And, you know, but obviously you'd go faster if you're going for 20 miles than if you're going for 100, just like you would with a human. So that's a kind of negotiation we have to do with the dogs, where I'm like, okay, trust me, guys, like, you want to take it easy here. And they're like, ugh, you're such a drag.
Now that you've described that situation, what do you see in how we're moving through this pandemic with that context of what you see from the sled?
The main thing when you're taking a team of dogs out for a trip of any length, you know, not one day, but let's say it's going to be a multi-stage race or a multi-stage camping trip where you're camping and sleeping along the way and you're really going on a long journey. You have to front load rest. You have to build in rest that the dogs don't even want, because they are ready to keep going. They, you know, maybe you're going to run 30 miles and you as the musher decide, okay, we're going to camp right here. There's a nice river. There's some water. I'm going to build a fire. You know, the dogs think that is so boring because they still have energy. They're not tired yet. They want to keep going. And they don't totally get a choice. Like that's where I come in as the musher is, you know, people always think, how do you get the dogs to run? How do you make the dogs run? And they don't realize that so much of our work as mushers is the total opposite. It's really getting the dogs to stop. It's getting the dogs to rest. It's helping them to maintain a pace that's going to be sustainable for them and make it so that the whole trip, however long that is, stays really fun the entire way.
Talk more about front-loading rest, forcing your team to rest, and why you make yourself and the dogs take real breaks even when they don't want to.
You can't really force them to rest. You know, as they say, you can lead a horse to water. But I have some photos from the team I've taken where you set up the best camp, like you put out straw beds, you give them a nice meal, you heat up the meal in your cooker, and it's really like, you know, steaming raw meat, which is disgusting to us, but they love it. And they, you know, you put on their little coats because they sleep in coats and under blankets, and they will just stand and stare at you and be like, we are not taking a nap. This is boring. We like running. You know, so you can't make them sleep, but you can make them wait till at least some of the other dogs have had a chance to sleep. It's kind of like little kids being like, I don't want to go to bed. And you're the parent and you're like, yeah, like, I know you think you don't want to, but look, you're just going to be happier if you have a bedtime. And the trick, of course, is always to stop before they feel tired. you know, you always want to leave them wanting more. And then they start to learn, like, okay, even if we want to keep going, look, Blair's got the straw out. She's got the blankets out. She's taking off our booties. I guess I'll humor her and sleep for a couple hours because I know that I get to run again.
Blair Braverman is a dog sledder and an author. She lives in northern Wisconsin, and she's written a piece in the New York Times about learning to live with uncertainty through sledding. Thank you for being with us here on the Ideas Network. Blair, there's this moment that you talk about when you discuss the fact that rest builds trust. Will you read that part of your essay for us?
Yeah, absolutely. A sled dog learns that by the time she's hungry, her musher has already prepared a meal. By the time she's tired, she has a warm bed. If she's cold, you have a coat or blanket for her. If she's thirsty, you have water. And it's this security, this trust, that lets her pour herself into the journey, give the trail everything she has without worrying about what comes next. You can't make a sled dog run 100 miles. But if she knows you've got her back, she'll run because she wants to, because she burns to, and she'll bring you along for the ride.
That description just hit me. There's real beauty in feeling like somebody's there for you.
That's why I'm hooked on the sport, honestly. I mean, that's why this is so addictive. People go out for a dog sled ride. You know, I went out for the first time when I was 18 years old, and that was 14 years ago, and which is amazing to me to think it. This has been part of my life for so long. And the dogs are so joyful, and you get to experience with them. You get to experience wilderness with them. You get to experience adventure with them. You get to follow them over the course of their lives as they learn. And then in return, they take you on these amazing journeys. And just the depth of the love is extraordinary.
I can't help but draw the parallel to the pandemic. And I mean, I know I've stretched myself too thin over these months. And it's those places and those people that I trust where I can feel calm. That's what has made it better. Do you feel that?
Absolutely. Well, in this case, we're living through this thing that's very difficult, and we don't know how long it's going to last. And, you know, of course, the difference is that sled dogs have physical limits. They can't run forever, but they like running. And I would say at least the very vast majority of us do not like living through a terrible global pandemic. You know, if even if we haven't been affected, even if we're not grieving firsthand, we're living in vastly different circumstances. But what I've learned from the dogs is that you don't have to know how long something's going to last in order to take care of yourself in a sustainable way as you get through it. And the trick is you have to take it easy. You have to build in rest. You have to take care of your physical health. You have to take care of your mental health, because whatever you encounter on the way, you're going to be in better shape to deal with it. I can be very ambitious. I want to do everything with my dogs. I want to do everything with my writing. You know, and in this case, living with the stress of the pandemic, I have to remember to take quiet time, to build in chances for my soul to rest, so to speak, where, you know, I'm just existing. And the dogs help with that. They help with that a lot. But they also inspire me in that regard.
I mean, we're in survival mode, right? And we can take that for granted when our basic needs are met. And when they're not, you advocate for things like not looking too far into the future, not thinking so much about the unknown, but you suggest, like, eat a nourishing meal. Why do you think we should recognize that there's value in that?
Because the truth is, no matter how much we worry about the future, we won't know what it is and we won't be able to change it. It's so much worry that the only thing it brings to our lives is negativity and difficulty and pain. You know, if you're an epidemiologist, or if you're doing something like that, or a medical professional where it's your job to think about the future of the pandemic, then of course that's a very different position to be in. But For those of us who aren't in that position, what we need to do is take care of ourselves. We need to take care of our loved ones. And, you know, that, of course, also means not putting them at risk, staying socially distanced, being patient, and finding ways to make this existence sustainable and even, you know, even strengthening. Like, what do you need? Do you need to read books or talk to your friends or make art or, you know, take up some strange sport or hobby or watch a lot of TV shows? Like, whatever it takes to sort of be okay in the moment rather than just pushing yourself and pushing yourself on and counting on some future point where, you know, everything will be okay then.
What do you say to someone who thinks there are so many big problems and there are so many things that I need to do that that kind of care feels superficial?
Well, it is superficial, you know, and it is in the moment, like you're resting in that moment. You're feeding yourself in that moment. But I guess I don't know what superficial really means in that case, because my job and my challenge is to let go.
We're learning some lessons alongside Blair Braverman. She's an author and she races sled dogs. Blair talks about coping with a lack of control and developing trust and the importance of rest. They're among the lessons she says she's learned from her dogs. Blair wrote about resilience in the New York Times, and we caught up in November. Let's talk about literal rest. How important have you found rest in mushing and in everyday life?
Well, when you're on the trail, the dogs are resting roughly 50% of the time. You know, we call it a 50-50 run-rest schedule. So maybe you run for 6 hours and then you camp for 6 hours and you run for 6 hours and you camp for 6 hours. It's not 9 to 5. Like, you could be running at 2 in the morning and you could be sleeping at 2 in the afternoon, but the rest is there proportionately. The trick is that when the dogs are resting, the musher's usually working very hard. They're melting snow, they're building fires, they're doing all these things to sort of keep everything going. And so as a musher, you can end up getting very little sleep yourself. As the musher, you think, well, I can do this. I can do this. Like, I can push myself, and that's my choice. But the challenge is to make sure you're taking as good a care of yourself as you are of your dogs.
You write, it's far easier to prevent fatigue than to recover from it later. As you look at how we are dealing with the pandemic, do you think we've missed our chance to prepare ourselves, to give ourselves that rest we need for the long haul?
Oh, absolutely not. I think it's never too late, right? Because we don't know how long this will last. It comes back to that. But it's never too late to take care of your basic needs. If you haven't been resting a lot, you can start resting a little bit more. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. Take things a little bit easier. You know, have a meal that feels nourishing, and whatever that means for you. If you're really busy and exhausted, maybe that means you get a plate of frozen lasagna and you put that in the oven and it's still like a warm meal. Maybe it means you're like you love cooking and you're going to make some elaborate thing from scratch. It's what sort of gives you energy when everything in your life is sort of taking energy away. You have to figure out how to take care of yourself.
We're talking with Blair Braverman about what working with her sled dogs has taught her about resilience and strength. This is the Ideas Network. Blair, I understand you're maybe a bit of a reformed planner. It's frustrating. It's frustrating because it can feel like we don't have a lot of say in what's happening in our lives right now. Do you think that we can plan and try to account for everything? How do we reclaim that sense of control?
Oh my gosh. I used to be such a planner. I used to, you know, I knew how everything was going to go. And then I got into dog sledding more seriously. And, you know, of course, that all went out the window because there's so many variables. There's so many variables in dog sledding, you know, and of course, the metaphor is right there. There's so many variables in our everyday life, too. The idea that we can plan and account for everything is really just sort of a comforting illusion we hold on to. But for me, the trick has been to shift from the idea that I can plan for things, that that's what will make me prepared, and instead try to think of it as, if I take care of myself, if I am prepared in sort of basic ways, like on the trail, that means I'm learning different skills. I'm really building up my skills with making fires and weird situations and things like that. In life, it could mean something different. Then I don't need to know what will happen because I trust my future self to be able to handle it when it comes.
Speaking of the unknown, you say sometimes your dogs know more than you do. Like when?
Oh my gosh, so often. I mean, think about pet dogs that you have. They have all these instincts we can't even imagine. They have all these senses we can't imagine. So they know, you know, if there are animals on the trail, if a moose was there. Or, I mean, I can see if there are footprints, but I can't smell it on the wind. You know, they understand the weather differently than I do. They understand the texture of the snow. They hear things. And those are all instincts that I can't even begin to imagine what that's like. So I have to sort of let the dogs translate it for me. I'm paying attention to where they're looking, where they're smelling, you know, their body language, their posture, the amount of energy sort of that's pouring out of them. I trust them. I trust them to, you know, to be honest in the sense that they're telling me what they have. They're giving me what they have, and I'm doing the same to them.
Some people take issue with sledding with dogs. One of the things you've posted on Twitter is that responsible mushers are trying to make the sport better, to take care of your own dogs and also other dogs. How are you doing that right now?
Well, how am I doing that right now is it's what I've built my life around. You know, the way I think about it, I think mushing is so fundamentally good. I think the dogs love running. I think that having a bond with dogs is, you know, so valuable for them and for us. I think being in wilderness is so good for us. There's all these things that are just a fundamental good. And it doesn't mean that everything that's always been done around mushing has been good. But my challenge and the challenge of the mushers that I'm close with and I care about is to do what we can to honor that good and to really bring it out and to take the best possible care of our dogs that we can and try to represent that, try to raise awareness, do whatever we can to just make sure that, you know, the dogs are allowed to be dogs and they're allowed to be joyful and they're allowed, you know, when they get old, then they're allowed to rest. Like everything that they need, we sort of take our cues from them. People are always saying, oh, how do you, at what age do you retire dogs? And it seems like such a silly question because we don't retire them. You know, they sort of announce to us. It's very clear to tell whether a dog wants to do something or not. It's not a mystery. If you've been around dogs, you know they make their opinions clear. And so we just have to listen. You know, if there's a dog who wants to run 30 miles a day at age 10, that's so wonderful. Like we have a spot for that. And if they want to retire and hang out in the garden, that's great. We have, you know, we have like toys and stuff and they can hang out with their friends. And we just try to honor that as best we can. And I try to never be set in my ways. My goal is just to do right by the dogs. And I do the best I can. And I will always keep doing the best that I can.
It's almost too obvious, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What is the parallel there then? What are you learning about taking care of yourself?
Oh, I am so much harder on myself than I would ever, ever be on the dogs. And that's been, that's the challenge. I listen to the dogs in a way I don't listen to myself. You know, like if a dog tells me they're tired, I'm never going to say like, oh, keep running. I'm going to, you know, we'll stop. Or that if it's one dog and not the whole team, the dog can ride in the sled. But if I'm tired, I'll try to push through. You know, if I'm sick, I'll try to push through. And, you know, I had Lyme disease a couple of years ago and I got really sick. And part of what was hard about it is that I was so resistant, I think, so terrified of what it meant to rest, you know, for months at a time, that I beat myself up for what my body needed. When really it's sort of a neutral, like if you need rest, you rest. And the dogs are good at that. And I am less so, but they teach me.
In those moments that creep up on us, when it just all feels like it's too much, where do you find the strength and the will to keep going?
Well, the dogs. I think my favorite thing to do with them when we're not running is to sit down on the ground. and the speed at which they can lick your face is truly astonishing. But they're chasing each other and they'll jump off me. And it just like I sort of forget about all of my problems. And I do that basically every day. But it it never fails to bring me perspective about what matters is where I am right now. What matters is taking care of the people, by which I mean dogs, that I'm responsible for. And finding moments to feel happy, even if the big picture makes it hard to feel happy. The little picture is still right there.
Blair, thanks so much for sharing your story with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I am totally honored.
That was dog sledder Blair Braverman. Blair and her husband run Braver Mountain Mushing in northern Wisconsin. She wrote about what working with sled dogs teaches her about living with the unknown. You can read her essay in the New York Times. We've set up a link to it at ours. It's wpr.org/centraltime. I spoke with Blair in November.